It's like this and only this, so I move on. Tell me, my mom's in front of the mall, and then I sing this thing about milk. From fifth grade, I knew this kid was swift. Pain was how his mind long, so we got his grind on. But now, with years later, I say, hey, he flashes one full of AU. And hey, you, the warning drove from a Seville as it sped by. Let fly, rat a tat tat, his blood spattered. I strike to see the driver with my eye. Mom's grabbed sky and caught lead in her thigh. I put her behind the trash can, dashed to my head. It was too late, it's sad that Rommel was perforated. Waited in sweat for the medic, says my mom's lead. Even if he was alive at the scene, by now my man Rom's dead. The cops do not care, cause our skin has too much shade. They'll dismiss this as some niggas misbehave. But I'll never forget the driver of that blue Seville. To bust shots in this grip, yeah, but still, yeah. I can't do this alone. My crew's fine, so I slip two dimes into the paper.
I'll stay home, get some rest, call my girl in. Tazay's on the phone talking about the world's end. What happened? Your mom's got capped and your niggas dead. You're talking about kickbacks and bullets in the head. Well, the blitz come in dozens, but I got cousins that live around the block and they got a clock and we just simply bust them. I trust them, but my life and plus the clock is like it. Easily concealed, yeah. Easy it appear like cap white. Right? Hey, Taz, you don't sound rap.
Get them there.
Maintain composure, hit the dozer, pick a book up. Don't be shook up, I got hooked up. Look up my manifesto, I need a special. Teams for the schemes, get a bus so we can bring the blueprints to the residents.
All right, music scale number 93. I'm going to start this off because we had music scale, actually it's music scale 94. Last week was music scale 93, and we missed a golden opportunity to put 93 to infinity. Yeah, one of the most slept on albums. In a long time. I bet you nobody knows 93 till infinity, except for like us.
Yeah. A few people know Hieroglyphics, Ryan.
Yeah, well, yeah. Around here.
Yeah, but like, still, like, people our age, like, that's still everybody knows that.
Only one bad song on the album. Batting Practice. Remember?
Wasn't that song pretty short? It was like...
It sucked.
That's all I know. Intro?
Yeah. No, it was a long song.
Was it?
Yeah.
So, was that the one with was it Casual? The one Casual was getting a little bit too much mic time.
Casual, put that microphone down.
Yeah, because usually that's about what happens. Most of the bad Hieroglyphic songs are when Casual starts to monopolize, but that kind of goes way back.
But your boy designed his logo, did he?
He did. He did design a. One of the album covers for Casual, yeah. Casual's first solo, I think, or maybe it was just an EP.
Did he get any money for that, or was it just like...
It was a contest. He won a contest.
Oh, right, yeah. So, yeah.
That was good for him.
Yeah. Probably sold, like, what, 8,000 copies, maybe?
Maybe.
Because Casual sucked.
Yeah. That was the bottom line.
So, take-home show for the Royal Rumble. What'd you think?
It was a pretty good show. I don't know how much of... what they did on that show is sustainable, because I think a lot of what made that show good was the guest appearances. I thought Brock made the show really entertaining as well, and I mean, Paul Heyman to the larger degree, but I thought Brock did pretty good in the times when he had to speak, and I think they did a really effective job of, in a really short period of time, making that guy a babyface. That, like, that's what I'm saying. I don't know that that's sustainable. I don't know that that's what they want to do going forward. But, I mean, it was very easy for them to take a guy like Brock Lesnar and, without doing very much at all, get the entire crowd behind him just by having him go against the Authority, which, like, maybe that lends a little bit, maybe that makes the Authority a little bit better, or at least shows, like, if they have the right face to go against them, like, it could be a really effective...
What are you talking about, dude? They already have the face.
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, nobody cares. The funniest thing I thought about the whole show, actually, and I don't think anybody would have caught this, but the moment when John Cena pinned Rollins for the 1-2-3, and then they went for, like, the camera further back, someone right in front of the camera jumped up and threw a drink all the way into the ring. And I've never seen anyone throw stuff. I mean, at John Cena before. I just found that to be pretty hilarious. But no, I mean, I thought it made Brock extremely, like, compelling as a character. And it's just funny they can't get any interest brewed up with Cena, and without even any build up. Brock all of a sudden could be like a monster baby face, even though he's probably not going to be around that much longer anyway. I thought it was pretty good.
So we got Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. I know last year we kind of did a who's the favorite to win the Royal Rumble. We can get into that if you want to keep on talking more about Raw or anything like that.
Well, and this kind of what I wanted to talk, what I was telling you after we got done recording last week. I kind of want to talk about the Ascension, actually, because like two episodes, we did a really quick hit towards the end of the show, so I didn't feel like we had too much time to get into it. But I have a lot of problems with the Ascension. It's funny because, like, I'm reading a lot of people are on the internet, like through Twitter or whatever, seem to be very upset about the way Ascension is being booked. And I guess to a degree, like, I can see that. But I just think they suck overall. So, like, in my mind, I don't think that they're going to have a problem because of bad booking, as much as I just don't think that they have the chops in the ring to get it done. I think their gimmick is a bad idea as well, too. Like, nothing that they're doing is helping these guys. But I don't think they're that good of a tag team anyway. I thought, and here's like my big problem with them. Okay, aside from the fact that it's a really bad idea to, unless you have a team that you know you can build like a division around, you should keep Demolition and the Road Warriors name out of their mouth completely. Like if this team like really had some kind of like big talent to draw off of going forward, and you want to kind of drum that kind of level up. Yeah, that's one thing. But these guys, I don't think they don't have that future. And, like, a couple things that those teams had, Demolition Road Warriors, like, they're all, like, really big, imposing figures that still have really good psychology. And they're trying to make the Ascension...
Well, let's talk about that psychology. So go ahead and start talk about the Road Warriors' psychology and the Demolition psychology, because I know their psychology, but...
Well, I couldn't say as much on specifics of the Road Warriors.
But you saw it.
I didn't see a ton, yeah. Like... Demolition was just like straight smash mouth, but then they knew how to double team really well, so they had this really physical style. You know, they had the element of Mr. Fuji out there always like to be a distraction if he had it to, or if things got really bad, throw the Japanese salt. So like,
but they also had a face run too.
Yeah, and they had a really good face run too. And they're another good example of guys that were absolute heels all the way. Nobody could stand them. The second they showed one sign of going face, everybody loved them. And, their promo style was kind of, like, completely dated for what wrestling is today, but, like, really worked for what they, I mean, there were two guys that would just get up there and yell, pretty much. But it really worked the way that they kind of played off each other on the mic. And Axe would be kind of like the monotone guy and just kind of lay it out, and then Smash would come in and get all crazy. I don't know, like, it just worked what they had. And they were, you know, for the size they were, like, Smash was really big, but he was still pretty agile, which was, like, a pretty unique thing at the time. There weren't that many guys, because I think he was going about 6'8", 300, maybe a little bit more.
Talking about Smash. Smash, yeah.
Yeah, Axe was short.
I don't think he was 6'8".
Six, seven, maybe.
He was imposing.
Yeah, and still pretty athletic.
And then he became the Repo Man. But yeah.
And neither one of those guys were as athletic as the Road Warriors, I think. And Animal like was really like a hybrid for his time. Like that guy was huge, but still could do a lot of the really like pretty close to being a high flyer for kind of what passed as that in its time.
Hawk, you mean? Because Animal was the bigger guy. Hawk was the...
Hawk was taller.
Yeah.
But an Animal seemed to be, like, wider.
Animal was a power base
right,
of that.
But I still remember him going, like, drop kicks and doing a lot of, like kind of pretty athletic stuff for a guy his stature at that time.
You saw him do a drop kick before?
I mean, granted,
you did say that you didn't have a lot of experience with the Road Warriors.
Yeah.
I mean,
I know who's who.
Yeah. Here's kind of a couple things. You know, you bring up Smash. Smash was one of the better workers. You know, he was the worker of the group, but overall, he was a great worker. I mean, Barry Darso never really got his due in terms of being a worker. Hawk was a great worker as well. I mean, Hawk, Hawk in a different time could have been a really great, really good singles wrestler. And I remember watching him in NWA or WCW when he was a singles for a while. And just a really good, just a really entertaining type wrestler. I mean, he could have, you know, if he had a singles career, I think he could have done really well for himself. But that's like kind of the key thing is like you have the great worker, and then you have kind of the power guy coming in, whether it was Axe or whether it was Animal. These two guys, a couple things, like this is the first team that NXT has brought up, and, you know, they kind of have, you know, they face off against kind of the these nobodies. And the difference is that I remember you liked Demolition a lot, and I was like, ah, you know, Demolition sucks. You know, there's a knockoff of Road Warriors. But then they would wrestle like every Saturday morning, and they would wrestle against jobbers, and then that's when I really started seeing their ring psychology and just kind of like, I mean, them getting a guy in their corner and then both of them coming out and just like double axe handling to death, you know, that's what really kind of turned me on to them.
That quick tags.
Yeah, the quick tags and then Road Warriors are just something that's like a spectacle. I mean when they came out, they were so intense, and their style was so strong that you're just sitting there, and everything's fast-paced, and they're just beating up on a jobber. But here's kind of the thing. It's like, I was like, well, would it have been better if Ascension worked with jobbers? But they've been working with jobbers, and they're not impressing, you know? And it's kind of like, you know, even if they have, like, a two-minute match or whatever it was, well, Road Warriors would have two-minute squash matches on Saturday morning, and you left that match just going like, wow. And where with these guys, just kind of like, well, what do you got? You really don't got anything. You don't really have any double team moves, and then your finisher is like something that's like the weakest like double team that you could pick for a tag team in a video game.
Yeah.
You know?
And that finisher is a big problem for me because as basic and simple as the double team is now, the Demolition, like putting the guy on his knee with the other guy coming middle rope elbow, that was gold back then. And then, and the Road Warriors with the Doomsday Device, you pick them up, and the other guy come top rope clothesline. Both those were devastating moves. And
well, the double team that Ascension has, it's more of a Japanese, it's a Japanese finisher.
And here's the problem. There's nothing wrong with the finisher in itself. Yeah, okay? Well, maybe it being a finisher, but it's a solid double team move. But if you're going to try to put these guys in the vein of Demolition and Road Warriors, and even they mentioned at one time Powers of Pain, which these guys, to me, don't even compare to Powers of Pain, right? Was all six of those other teams, every guy was a monster to himself, right? So they're trying to, so you're supposed to think, well, these Ascension is like this physically dominant team. So I think the reason why they've been going against these no-name jobbers is because all those guys they're going against are like 5'5". It makes them look big. You brought them out. They brought them out there against NWO, and fucking X-Pac is taller than Victor, and the other guy is barely taller than X-Pac, and looks like a midget next to Scott Hall. Looks like I can't even describe the difference between him and Nash. So it's like, how are you going to try to build a team that you want to have just this physically imposing guys come roll through everybody when they're pretty much average size to barely above cruiserweight? Like, if you wanted to have that kind of team come in, I mean, you had it with the Wyatt family. You had Rowan and Harper, where one of them's like 6'10", and the other one's like 6'7", approximately. And those guys physically just mauled people. That's the team that, if that's the direction you want to go, have two big, relatively athletic guys come in and say, we're the next physically dominant, we're the guys that are going to be better than, like, this generation's Road Warriors Demolition. Like, that's a team that you want to do it, and you don't have to completely sacrifice Rowan's career in the process, because you can let Harper carry him a little bit. But these guys, I mean, I just don't see any future in the way that they're presenting them with what the attributes they actually have. I mean, to me, like, I don't care about these guys at all in terms of seeing them fight, like, the Usos or the Rhodes, right, or even Mizdow. Like, it just, there's nothing. They're really bigger than Miz now. I mean, the bigger guy's probably about as big as Sando, and the smaller guy's probably Miz's size. It's just silly.
And the main thing is that there's not a worker among them. I mean, and that's kind of the whole thing, too, is that they haven't displayed any tag team type chemistry, and they're supposed to be a throwback to these big, powerful teams. But the one thing that the powerful teams had is they had a worker, and they had great tag team chemistry. They knew how to work tags and stuff. Yeah, I mean,
You got your 300 pounder, and in his half of the finisher is a leg sweep.
Yeah, exactly. There's no power behind it.
Right, and the other guy is like, let's say maybe 240, doing a running European uppercut.
I mean the more physically imposing. I mean, we can go down the list of more physically imposing teams than them. The Hart Foundation is more physically imposing than those two guys were. Better finisher too. I mean, it's. The guy that does that spin, he does a spinning elbow or whatever it was, that would work good. But I mean, set him up better where and then a flipping leg sweep. I mean, isn't the whole point of, like, you know, you leg sweep the guy right when the guy's hitting him? I mean, how are you supposed to have impact when you're giving him a leg sweep? How's that really going to hurt him? You know, it's not like he's it's like they hit at the same moment. I mean, and that's what I was trying to say, is like it's a Japanese style finisher, but that finisher works when you have two kind of small athletic guys, and they can do it a whole lot better. Now, I'm not going to take away from that. I mean, that guy's spinning elbow, it's a great move. I'm not going to say it isn't, but you kind of lessen the impact when you're doing a leg sweep at the same time. And I don't understand it. I don't understand why a 300-pound guy is doing a leg sweep in the first place.
Right.
It goes against all logic of what they want them to be and what they're actually doing.
Exactly. And that's my main point. So, yeah, for what they're, like, the moveset, the things that they're having them do, it runs completely counter to the path that they're trying to lay out of being this physically dominant tag team in the mold of Road Warriors, Demolition. And again, the Powers of Pain are light years ahead of these guys as a team, and that's not saying much.
Well, the Barbarian
was a great worker.
But Warlord was terrible.
Yeah. So, and like Barbarian, and that's why when Barbarian was with Haku, when they were doing Faces of Fear run, I mean, that was a really good tag team. But... the Powers of Pain, I mean, everybody saw through what that was. But still yet, that was a far superior team to what the Ascension
was. I'll take it one step farther. Like, so, you know, during the whole kind of when video games were first starting to gain real popularity and stuff, and you'd say you'd have like a street fighting game, not Street Fighter itself, but like kind of like a, you know, you walk through a city and beat up a bunch of guys and stuff. Yeah. If you picked it, you know, and they'd have a character like, you know, dressed like those guys, you know, like guys in leather, guys with face paint. So if you pick the guy with the leather and face paint, are you picking him because you want him to do leg sweeps all the time? I mean, it's like, where's, you know, like you need the power move. Where's the power, dude? You know, you need the power move. And it's like, it just goes, it doesn't make any sense. And for people on Twitter to say like, oh, you know, like they're not giving them their due or they're not getting booked right. Well, they're not right to begin with. It just... They haven't shown anything for me to look at that team and dress the way they are and saying, okay, this doesn't make any sense. And it's just straight gimmick. But even the gimmick doesn't work because they don't fit the role of the gimmick. So, I don't even know why we're talking about these guys. I just really, really don't get it.
Yeah.
Just to say that they suck and you don't like them.
Well, I just thought it was interesting because it's like, you know, the internet wrestling fans spend so much time, and there's a lot of really smart people out there, like, being concerned with who's getting a push, and, like, you know, guys that have really paid their dues, guys that have shown a lot of wrestling ability, you know, on the independent circuit or different places. But then every once in a while, there's some guy that, like, they rage against John Cena. And they rage against these guys that they want to say are, like, products of the machine. And then you get a team like Ascension, which is like a complete 100% product of the WWE machine, and just because they're new, they're gonna treat these guys like they're being held down by the system. It's like, dude, these guys have been like processed, formed, and created through that system to get to this point, and they still are no good. Like, why are you spending so much energy like trying to say these guys aren't getting the push they deserve? They're getting, like, they're like Adam Rose, these guys that they threw up there but really have no business being there.
Well, the difference with Adam Rose is that he had a different character in NXT, and he became a new character when he got called up. These guys were doing this in NXT, and then they're getting called up, and it's just kind of a case where you're looking at them, and you're like, you know, like, they're not ready. And you look at that, I mean, I thought that segment was great when you bring out all these old tag teams. And it kind of felt a little bit like when What's-His-Name was going through all the...
Sandow.
Not Sandow, but...
It felt a lot like... sorry to cut you off, but the Sandow thing with DX. It felt a lot like that to me. Like, you had this young guy that there was a lot of build for, that was having a little bit of success, and then they brought him out there to kind of just play him against DX and have DX make him look like a fool. The difference was Sandow did a really good job of turning what happened that there into like something that he could build off of. So I guess we'll see if the Ascension can turn this into something it can build off of.
Well, to me it seems more like the redheaded dude. Remember when he was going against all the legends and stuff?
Yeah, Slater.
Slater, yeah. And
Slater was interesting.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we could talk about that too, because when Slater was doing it, I thought he was still coming across really well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's coming across as entertaining. This one, I just, you know, it was nice to see all these old guys come back, and when Ron Simmons comes out and stuff, and you're like, man, I want to see this guy. I want to see if this guy can still go.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, it wasn't, you know, he didn't do anything. And because I was watching it, and then I stopped watching it Monday. I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't see that Ascension package. And then I was on Twitter the next day, and there, or maybe it was Instagram, and some guy was saying, kind of saying, like, the same thing. He's like, I just saw these guys get beat by a bunch of grandpas. And I knew that NWO is the next segment. I was like, oh, so Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, you know, they probably fought him. And all these guys come out, and I'm thinking, like, well, I mean, you know, Hall can't go. You know, Nash probably can't go either. You know, so it's just kind of, yeah, I mean, the payoff was nice, but but the whole thing, like, where does that leave them there? You know, and then especially with the Royal Rumble coming up, they're probably going to be in the Royal Rumble.
Well, they're
doing like a tag team, right?
Yeah, they're going to go against New Age Outlaws.
Yeah.
But, and so, I mean, I suppose that's the build they want to go to, and then you probably have them go beat New Age Outlaws at the pay-per-view, which is pretty much a travesty, I think. And that's funny coming from me.
Especially Billy Gunn looked pretty fucking good in that segment.
Yeah, and I was never a big New Age Outlaws fan, right? I mean, I respect them. I was all right with them, but I wasn't like a big mark for these guys. But these guys, and the last run they had like a year ago or whenever it was, I mean, they had a really good run, much better than anything. Because I've been watching enough NXT, been seeing enough Ascension matches. I just don't see anything in them, and what they've been bringing is nowhere near what New Age Outlaws were bringing a year ago. At what in their mid 40s, in their 50s.
So what could you do to make the Ascension better? I mean, what game plan would you give them to make them better?
I don't think I have one, because again, I don't really think that they're very good, but I just think you're setting them up to fail. When you're bringing them up and comparing them to what, like, when you're putting them in, like, the path that they're trying to put them on right now is about the worst thing you can do for them, I think. I think it's a bad gimmick. I think it's a bad finisher. I think there could be a place for these guys as, like, kind of a good, a respectable job team. Because it's, you know, I like tag team wrestling, and it's better to have some established teams. But to me, you could have got a lot more mileage out of the primetime players than you're ever going to get out of these two guys. And you saw them, just for no reason, get split up. I mean, I don't know that Ascension is even going to last a year before they decide they need to split those guys up. And I don't see a future for them as a team or either one of them as individuals.
Yeah, I mean, to come, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much to say. I can say more, but to come out and try to knock off like some of the best teams in the WWE universe history wise, and then you can't deliver in the ring. Yeah, I'm done talking about these guys. I mean,
that's fine. I mean, as we brought it up really quickly at the end of the show, and I thought that would have been a good time to talk about it, but you know, we didn't get to. And then last week we did the Macho Man show, and there was no good time to bring that up either. So I just wanted to address it because I thought it's been something that was worth discussion over the last couple of weeks. So if we're ready to move on from that, I'm fine.
Right.
I just had to get that off my chest.
The Ascension sucks.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
All right. So you want to go on a Rumble, or you want to keep talking about Raw? I mean, Raw was good.
Dude, I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning, so
what'd you think about Lesnar?
You know, I didn't... I kind of fast-forwarded all that stuff. I mean, I saw, like, the... I think I stopped it when they showed Sting, but I really didn't, like, kind of see, like, him going against the Authority. So I don't, you know, I really didn't catch that, just because to me it's kind of more of the same. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you look at Brock and you look at Ryback, right? Kind of two guys kind of in the same physically imposing mode. But with Brock not even saying anything, his character is way more developed than, like, say, a Ryback is, you know, and Ryback actually tries to communicate and tries to play the system. Brock doesn't have to do anything. It's just kind of like this whole mystique that they put around Brock Lesnar that I really like, and I just think, you know, he, when he's on TV and stuff, it's like, it's worth watching. The only problem is that when you put him in with an angle with Cena and stuff like that, it really doesn't work for me. And then even, I've kind of heard rumblings that Cena's going to win the belt at the Royal Rumble, which doesn't make a lot of sense for me. But, you know, that's what it is. You know, I don't know what else to say, because I was kind of, you know, we were kind of waiting for Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, and then that's where Roman Reigns would win the title. But with everything that's going on now, it's just kind of like, I'm just kind of in the wait and see mode with a lot of things. But with me, it's like, I can, you know, you ask me what I think about Brock or whatever, but the whole thing is like, it doesn't really matter what I think about Brock, because that's not the main storyline. It's still like, Cena has to be in the storyline, and it's just kind of like the same thing over and over again. So I really don't get involved in the main event picture, because Cena's in the main event picture. I'm more interested in watching kind of the undercard and everything like that.
I suppose, but I mean, I think it is different. It is different to me, because Brock hasn't been this character in, I don't know, maybe.
Well, I mean, I didn't experience it. So right. I mean, people were cheering for him and stuff, and
yeah, well, that,
and he was waving to the crowd, and you know.
No, he didn't do that. But it's just, I mean, there's been no. I mean, he's been a straight-up heel, right? It's just, he's not been, like, a great character. People dislike Brock Lesnar. And without any kind of build, without doing anything, like, just the fact that he was tired of Rollins, who, you know, I think Rollins is really doing his job. People being tired of what the Authority is doing, because that, and yeah, again, I can see what you're saying. The whole Authority story of, well, we'll just put you in a 3-on-1 match, like, just made, like, Brock got this huge pop. Like, I like the pop. When someone gets a really good pop, and it's pretty well-deserved, it's kind of fun to see. And just, and also the way Heyman plays things, right? Because, like, Heyman can go from face to heel, like, persona-wise on TV, like, in an instant. And so just kind of the walk down to the ring he had was, instead of kind of like the, like, I'm the slimy manager, it's kind of like, you guys want to see us come kick these guys' ass right now. It's kind of like the strut going, coming down the ring while Brock was going down, and everyone wanted to see Brock just come kick these guys' asses. And I don't know, it was a really good pop, and it was a lot of good energy for it, and it was, like, the right thing. The way the show ended wasn't really focused on, or at least that for that moment of that main event, wasn't really focused on John Cena. John Cena was not on my mind at all. I completely forgot when John Cena was in the storyline. I'm like, hey, this guy's getting a good pop. Let me see what he can do right now. And then he came out and he delivered. F5 to Kane, F5 to Big Show.
Yeah. I saw that part. I didn't even register it being like him going against the Authority, I guess. I saw it and I was just kind of like, okay. You know, because to me that wasn't really that's not really my focus right now. Like, I'm kind of really focused on the Royal Rumble in terms of.
And why would you be focused on Lesnar? He shows up once every 6 months, and like, I think there's good things about it. I think there's bad things about it. But I thought in that moment, I thought it worked, and I thought that for what was a good Raw, to go out on a note where John Cena like gets a cheap roll up on Seth Rollins after he gets his ass beat for 15 minutes by three guys.
The fan throws the drink at him.
Yeah, but
the scissor upon him and stuff.
Yeah, but. As we were talking about, like, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about Raw and saying how, you know, started off like a good show, and then after about the hour and a half mark, it just died, and all the matches that they had in that last hour, and then ending it with a lame promo, just killed all the momentum of what was starting off to be a promising show. Like, you had a good show from pretty much beginning to end, and then a main event that had all the markings of, oh, here's going to be another stupid finish, which it was. It ended up still ending on a high note because Brock Lesnar came down and had, like, a really entertaining 3 minutes, I thought.
Yeah. I would agree.
I didn't
fast forward the part where he F5 Big Show and stuff, but it's kind of the thing where I look forward to watching Raw. It starts off with another promo, and then... And I just get... Since I'm really not... involved in the storyline. That's like, it's like the main thing. It's like, I'm not involved with any main event storyline right now. It's like, I'm much more interested in Daniel Bryan. What I took away from the end of that show was that kind of what we talked about when Ziggler and Ryback and Rowan got fired. You're saying, like, well, how can you take away Ziggler when he's pretty much the heart and soul of the show? And I'm just kind of going, like, well, I'm like, I'm glad, you know, he's back and he, you know, he can come back. For, I mean, I wasn't glad. I knew he was going to come back. But it's just kind of a case like, okay, so they set it up where Ziggler can now do stuff again. And it only lasted 2 weeks instead of like a month or whatever it was. And I was kind of maybe semi-happy that that angle was over. But I don't know, dude. I mean, it's just anything that – it's funny, like, when I watch the show, like, I'm not interested in the beginning. I'm not interested in the end. So anything at, in the end, I've been watching such bad main events, if you call them main events, at the end of Raw, that I'm just kind of, there's no feeling when I watch it. It's just like, okay, it's almost over. I saw the things I wanted to see. I know what we can talk about at this podcast, and it's really not about the main event picture. I mean, the whole thing is that we've done how many podcasts since we've come back, right? We haven't talked about any main event in Raw, except to say that it's not good. You know, we don't talk about the beginning promo. We don't talk about the main event. We talk about all the stuff in the middle. And that's what I'm watching. I'm watching all the stuff in the middle, and I really don't care about the main event picture. And I probably won't until something happens. And I just don't get it. You know, it's like I can only hear so many John Cena promos in the beginning, and whether it's going to be like the funny John Cena or the, you know, quote unquote witty John Cena, where he cracks jokes at everybody and you know, it's just cheap pop after cheap pop. I mean, when I'm watching it live, it's like I'm just sitting there and like, the second that he says something to get the crowd riled up, I do a mock, you know, fist pump in the air, you know, like, yeah, you know, and then at the end, it's like, since the match isn't going to be good at the end, I'm desensitized to it. So, I mean, anything that happens during that time, it's just like, okay.
All right. Well, that's fine. You want to talk about the mid-card, so then, you mentioned Daniel Bryan, so what do you think? I'll start off instead of just saying, what do you think? And I'll say, I'm glad Daniel Bryan's back. I think his promos have been really good. I like that he's going to be back for the Rumble. I think there's a ton of intrigue about who's going to win now that he's back in the mix. But my problem, again, is why the fuck does all he can do is fight Kane, dude? Like, every goddamn time he comes back, oh, you're going to be in a match with Kane. Oh, you beat Kane, but now we're going to make it 2 out of 3 with Kane. Oh, next week, if you can't beat Kane, you can't be in the Royal Rumble. Like, what the hell does Kane have to do with anything? The match is going to be at least mediocre because Daniel Bryan can carry it, and people have a Jones to see Daniel Bryan because they haven't seen him so long. But Kane brings zero, zero, zero to the table at this point.
Well, what I liked about Raw was that he fought against Bray Wyatt, and I thought that was a good match. It was nice to watch that match, to have him actually work against someone else, and that match had a lot of moments. I mean, I thought both of those guys really shined. It probably ended in a DQ, right?
I think Kane came out.
Yeah, Kane came out or whatever it was, and there's some DQ here or there and stuff and everything. But you know, that's what I really liked. I mean, you asked me what do I think about Daniel Bryan being back. Daniel Bryan needs to work with better people, and I think that I couldn't put my finger on it why I wasn't really interested in him being back as much, because he's fighting a stiff, and it's like, but when you put him in a match with like Bray Wyatt and you really don't know who's gonna win or lose, and then all of a sudden oh my god, it's Kane's walking down the aisle, like, oh, okay, I know how this is gonna go. Kane's gonna interfere, so it wasn't a DQ. Kane interfered, and then Bray Wyatt beat Daniel Bryan, mm-hmm. which I was totally fine with, but then now we have to watch Daniel Bryan get beat up by Kane. So it's just kind of like the whole thing. It's like every big match they have, they're giving outs to everybody. Like Big Show will be like fighting someone, and then Roman Reigns comes out, or Roman Reigns will fight someone, and Big Show comes out and interrupts the match or whatever it is. So it's like, okay, so what's really being won or lost here? It's like we talked a lot about how the belts don't matter. Well, now like who wins or loses the matches don't matter either, because you're always going to have, if you see Roman Reigns fighting against, say, Cesaro, you know Big Show's going to walk down the aisle. And it's the same thing, you know, like you can't have a Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan match and, like, say, okay, you know, Daniel Bryan beats Bray Wyatt, and we could sit here and talk about, like, well, why did Daniel Bryan beat Bray Wyatt when Bray Wyatt did this? Both these guys were coming out winners in the matches. And to increase a storyline that Kane can't carry, he comes out and interferes. I mean, Kane can't carry a storyline anymore. I mean, it just is, his character is bland. It doesn't work. The only way Kane works is that when he's in his mask and he's like either a, you know, the power base for a tag team, or he's a face for a tag team. I mean, that's the only way he works now, and that's the only way that Kane ever worked. And it's just kind of like they try to have Kane, you know, when he first unmasked, and they try to have him be like the top heel in SmackDown. That didn't work. And it only worked when he was like a sidekick with someone. And it's just over and over, and I'm supposed to sit there and go like, oh, Kane's so great. The problem is that when Kane was with Daniel Bryan, and they're the tag team champions, and they start saying, like, well, Kane, this is like Kane's 500th match on Raw. You're like, wow, that's really great. You know, like, wow, that I didn't realize that he had that type of longevity. But then when you make him stand on his own, it's like, oh, who cares?
Right.
You know, so, and that's just kind of, you know, what it is. And I don't agree with the Roman Reigns and Big Show rivalry. I mean, that's just, you know, like, they're rivals, but then Big Show's coming out talking about other things, and then Roman Reigns comes out of the middle of nowhere. It's just, I just, you're taking these guys, Daniel Bryan, you could put, you know, maybe Ziggler you put there a little bit, but Roman Reigns, Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, and you put them in feuds that don't matter, and they're just piddling away on the mid-card, and that only goes for so long. And so what ends up happening is that all these guys that can be really that can take the leap and be like the next really big face, they put them with these feuds. And so what am I really watching for? Because I don't watch the opening, I don't watch the end, and then the stars that I want to see are in feuds that I really don't care about. So what am I really watching for? I'm watching for like the non-entity guys, like Cesaro and what's his name, you know, and then the New Day, the Divas matches. You know, I'm like, I'm watching the Divas. Like, I watch the Divas match because it's like, okay, let's see what happens here. You know, because I don't care. All the guys that I like, they're putting them in these feuds that doesn't matter. And the only guy that I was watching for a long time was Dolph Ziggler, because Ziggler was actually defending his belt, mm-hmm. facing off against really good guys. Someone won, someone lost, and it was great to see. And so now it's just kind of a case where we talk bad about the gimmicks, but I'm only watching for the gimmicks because there's nothing else for me to watch, because I get tired of the mid-card feuds that don't mean anything. Nothing. What is going to come out of Roman Reigns versus the Big Show? Nothing. Nothing's going to come out of it. What's going to come out of Daniel Bryan versus Kane? Nothing. And so what am I forced to watch? This main event feud that I don't care about? The only thing that I'm hoping for, on hope upon hope, is that Rollins can cash in and be the champion. But then what are you going to do? You can put him with John Cena, and then I'm not going to care about it again? So it's just kind of like this revolving thing where it was just apathy throughout the whole thing. So now it's like, when Adam Rose shows a spark of personality, I'm like jumping up and down and going all crazy. You know, I don't know what else to say. You know, it's like you take away the Wyatt family from me. That stuff was great. You take away the Shield from me. That was great. You know, the only thing I have now is like the Usos, and hey, you never know, they might break up the Usos too. I mean, it's just I just don't get it. You know, mm-hmm. Everything that I was watching it for has been taken away, and then you know when Dolph got fired, you were like, dude, what the hell is going on with this? I was like, you know, Dolph will come back.
You mocked me for thinking that he wouldn't be back there on the next row.
And now I'm democking you because it's like, I realized he was really one of the only reasons why I was watching the show.
Yeah. And that was a guaranteed good 20, 30 minutes every time.
And if you don't have Bad News Barrett in there or something like that, like a character like that, then, you know, guys that aren't involved in feuds and are just facing guys one-on-one, then it's really kind of a non-thing. But at the same time, I thought Raw was great. It's still fun to watch, but if you're going to ask me and ask me, like, well, what are your thoughts on this? It's like, I don't have any thoughts, because anything that I want out of wrestling in terms of certain wrestlers or something like that, I've already kind of made peace with the fact that it's not going to happen. So now it's funny, because when we first started doing this podcast, I was like, dude, you got to push this guy. I want to see this guy do the next level. I want to see if he can, you know, put the company on his back and see what he can do. Well, now it's like I'm becoming like you. It's like I just watch the matches for the matches, and I really don't care about the storyline anymore. I just don't know what would make it for me if someone, you know, because there's only three possible people that can win the belt, right? right now. And then whoever wins the Royal Rumble, then I was like, okay, so let's see if this guy going to get the push. Is he going to be there? But I know for a fact that Sheamus is going to come back for the Royal Rumble. I'm guessing that Randy Orton is going to come back for the Royal Rumble. And so whoever wins the Royal Rumble is going to, if it's Daniel Bryan that wins the Royal Rumble, right, then he has to still go against Kane. Maybe there's a Randy Orton in there somewhere. If Ziggler wins the Royal Rumble, then you definitely know he's going to go against Randy Orton, you know. And so it's just kind of, you know, I don't know.
So what do you think Randy Orton, what do you think Randy Orton's role is going to be post, okay, do you think Randy Orton's going to win the Rumble?
No, because I don't know who's going to win the Royal Rumble, but I wouldn't put it on Randy Orton to win.
So what do you think Randy Orton's role is going to be post-Rumble?
He'll probably, if they play it right, he'll be with the Authority, and then he'll slowly undermine the Authority and then become a really big face going against the Authority, and where he can establish himself again as a singles guy.
So you think they could, you don't think that ship sailed? You don't think he's already... He's not already against the Authority. When he
I think he already is, yeah. but I said they played it right. I don't think they're going to play it right. I think they're going to. There's not going to be any buildup, and he's going to turn on the Authority right away. And you're just going to have another guy in the cog that isn't going to have any type of storyline. He's just going to go into some feud that you don't care about. So you have all these good workers that are going against feuds of the Authority, where nobody can work in the Authority. Nobody is a good worker in the Authority except for Rollins, but. Even to me, Rollins, you know, I mean, Rollins is like the whipping boy, dude. You know, it's like Rollins, since he's joined the Authority, to me, hasn't really shined or had a really good match. I mean, he's had matches with Ambrose and stuff, but the stuff that he was doing when he was with the Shield, stuff where I was just sitting there being blown away when he was having a 5-star match with Daniel Bryan and another great match with CM Punk, it's like, that's the Rollins that I wanted to see. It's like, so you break up the Shield. You have Rollins, you know, that where he can start shining as a singles guy, and he's not, because what is he doing? He has the cronies with him, and, you know, he's not legit in the ring. He needs a big entourage to help him fight and stuff, and then, you know, he gets a quick roll of pin from John Cena and stuff or anything. So there's nobody really, to me, the only guy that has had any semblance of shining in the ring and really making a name for himself in the ring in the right way is Dolph Ziggler. And the guy that was doing that before was Roman Reigns. And Roman Reigns, luckily for the WWE, got hurt because they wouldn't have to push him with the momentum that he's getting since he's come back. You know, he's dying. He's dying with the Big Show. Bray Wyatt is dead right now. And Bray Wyatt, what is Bray Wyatt doing? And this guy won our match of the year. And you take away his two best elements, you know, and so where's Harper? Where's Rowan? I mean, all these guys that could be really big stars, you know, within a faction which was working, they take it all away and say, okay, let's break it up for what? You know, let's break them up so they can have their singles runs and have shitty feuds with people that nobody cares about.
Maybe Jed York's calling the shots. Let's just break everything up without having any other game plan going forward.
Yeah. And
I got my shot in there.
I don't know how to answer that question.
are you Tom Sula?
That's my Tom Sula impersonation. Oh, well. What did you say, Trent?
He said he wants to run the ball. Yeah. No, it's like, I mean, it's funny that they've now transferred that old way of thinking of what they used to do to these tag teams, and they've transferred it towards the factions. It's like... Like we said it a year ago, or whenever it was when they split up the primetime players. It's like you had the foundations of a pretty good tag team division. And then suddenly you split these two guys with no plan whatsoever for them to do anything as singles guys. And you do it right before WrestleMania when you know pretty much all your storylines are already like preset going forward. So there's no place for you to put these two extra singles guys. I mean, you can get guys in tag teams and kind of like... do things like where they do periodically like a three-way tag team match or a four-way tag team match just for the sake of having like a good wrestling match that goes like 30 minutes and doesn't necessarily have to mean anything.
I'll take it one step farther. So you had the Matadors too, and when the Matadors first came out, they were fun to watch. You know, whether their wins or losses, or when they would win, it was questionable. Mm-hmm. But at least they're using these two singles, Epico and Primo, that had nothing. And they did
Serpico,
yeah. That was. I still haven't seen that movie with Pacino. But they were working, mm-hmm. and then they introduced the Bull, and you know, to tell you the truth, the Bull was working too. But and then the focus became the Bull and not the two guys, and they became the sideshow. But where are the Matadors at? They're not around either. And I thought they were fun to watch, and that's a tag team right there that was lending credence to that tag team division. And now they're non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the guys get de-emphasized or whatever, but I'd rather have them as a team that you can bring in to make some the tag team division interesting than just splitting these two guys, and then each one of them works maybe one match every 2 months where they just come out and job for 30 seconds. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of potential with Titus O'Neil, but he's never going to get any like real push as a singles guy at this point in time. So you leave him with that team. They broke him up. They did nothing with him, and then they put him with Slater, which is again going nowhere. It's just like,
well, what happened to the show? Because I thought the Raw was good. We're just talking.
We can't talk about the Raw anymore because. I think we're just more talking about like the ideas that are behind it, right? Or like some of the silly decisions that can be made. I think mostly we said what we can say about this Raw. So I was trying to get it to a Rumble conversation. So that's where I was going with that. Because you had mentioned Randy Orton, so. Well, what three guys do you think can actually win this match?
I have no idea.
No idea.
I mean, so Daniel Bryan's one of them. Dolph is another one, and I think it's to me, it's really down to those two guys. I think it's Dolph or Daniel Bryan.
You think No Way Reigns wins this thing?
Oh yeah, no, you know what? Yeah, Reigns. So those three guys, and the guy that I think should win. Should be Roman Reigns, because I think Reigns can really take himself to be the next big star of the company. That to me, I think that's the guy that should win. The guys that have the storyline for it, you know, 1A and 1B, is Daniel Bryan, because you know during his run he never got a chance to actually be a champion. So I think logically he's the most logical pick to win the Royal Rumble, so he can actually get a chance at WrestleMania, and then they can do it all over again where he can win it again. He won the last WrestleMania too, right? As a champion, was that what it was? It was WrestleMania where he won, right?
No, it was SummerSlam is when he beat
both those
John
guys.
Cena, because I think Cena beat Rock at last year's WrestleMania.
Well, no, Daniel Bryan beat Cena at SummerSlam.
SummerSlam, yeah.
So it was the next WrestleMania where he won the actual belt, right? And then he got hurt.
No, he's never had a WrestleMania. So he beat John Cena that one night at SummerSlam.
So when did he win the belt against the?
And then they stripped it.
Triple H and Batista. It was WrestleMania.
Oh no! Then he can't. No, it wasn't. He didn't win WrestleMania. So the last year's SummerSlam was when he beat John Cena had the belt, and then Randy cashed in, and then a couple pay per views later, he finally beat Randy Orton for the belt, and then he got hurt. Remember they had that? They drew out like.
Remember CM Punk was supposed to fight Triple H, and then Daniel Bryan fought Triple H in the beginning, and then he fought him.
That was he fought Triple H at WrestleMania, and he didn't fight for the belt at WrestleMania.
Oh, because it was Brock Lesnar and John Cena.
Right.
No.
No, it was Brock Lesnar and Undertaker. John Cena fought The Rock.
The past WrestleMania, yeah. John Cena fought The Rock.
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
Who had the belt?
Rock. That was when he
and I think that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
No.
Okay. When did G.I. Joe come out?
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. Daniel Bryan did not win the belt until after.
So that makes it even more logical where he can have his WrestleMania moment and win the belt. The one that I think has the better storyline, which is like a good WWE setup, is Dolph Ziggler winning it because he got fired. And he had the great Survivor Series run, and he was hot as all hell. So I think storyline wise, I think he's the best shot for it. So I think he had those three guys, and out of those three guys, I don't know. And then you can throw in a Bray Wyatt at the same time, but Bray ain't gonna win shit. Yeah. You know, and then you have you have all these guys. I mean, the good thing about the Royal Rumble is that you have all these guys who can I see winning it? Bray Wyatt, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler, maybe Ryback.
Ryback?
Yeah.
I don't see that. I can't see Bray winning it. All the other names, except for Ryback, I could see winning it. The other name I could see winning it too could be Seth Rollins. I could see him maybe losing the match and then trying to cash in and then maybe not cashing in and then entering the Rumble and then winning the Rumble and then parlaying that towards WrestleMania. I could see that. I'd put that at low odds, but I could that would be an interesting way to keep him still being able to say he's the future.
Who do you want to win?
I mean, I would...
This question isn't like, well, who do you want to win? Like, you could ask me, like, who do you want to win? Well, I want Bray Wyatt to win. But it has to be tempered with...
Right.
Who do you want to win, which would best work with where WWE is right now?
So, I mean, I guess I'd have to say, since Dolph's pretty much my favorite guy, I would want Dolph to win. But I really don't see that happening. And then after that, I would say I want Reigns to win. And I think there's a pretty high likelihood that it will be Reigns. But there's a part of me that thinks that Daniel Bryan should win it just because he was robbed of like what should have been his year last year. And I have that fear again that if they try to say, let's give it to Reigns now, and then we'll kind of hold off on Daniel Bryan making his big comeback, that they slow play it again like they did last year, and then something bad happens and he gets hurt again, and then he never gets his opportunity.
Has the window already closed on him?
I don't think so.
If he doesn't win the Rumble? I mean, what do you see? If he doesn't win the Rumble and say Reigns wins the Rumble, what's his story for the next year? I mean, because you're going to have Reigns be the... You know, you can have Reigns be a champion for 3 months at the minimum. Or if they want to give him an extended run, maybe for like, you know, 6 to 8 months. I mean, where's Daniel Bryan fit in all this stuff? And that's the whole thing, because you have that, and then, well, where does John Cena fit? So it's just kind of, you know, it's good and it's bad. I mean, it's, we don't know what's going on, but where is Daniel Bryan's place in today's WWE if he doesn't win the Rumble?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think there are a lot of great matches to be had between, like, him and Rollins. And so I think that feud could be something that would be really fun to watch, whether the storyline, I mean, would be good or not. I mean, that's doubtful.
Can Bryan go heel again?
I think he has the ability to, but I don't know that would make the most sense. However, as I look at the authority, they should really do something to improve the roster there. Like, it's almost getting to Nexus levels of having this massive faction of guys that are really boring and really don't do anything, right? Like, yeah, when you had Nexus, you had Wade Barrett and a bunch of guys that some guys you knew sucked, some guys you knew in green and maybe could get good at some point, but none of those guys were ready. This isn't like that, where all the guys in this faction are like either like Rollins at his peak right now, or a bunch of guys that are past their prime. But if you want to make a good faction for the authority, if you want to make this something that is going to be entertaining, because like, fine, if Triple H wants to make handicap matches all the time, okay, I could and be that kind of Vince McMahon figure. I don't necessarily like it, okay, but if you give me a cut like Big Show, Rollins, and some other guy that can work that I could actually enjoy watching rather than Kane, I can kind of get with that. Big Show has his place, you know. Like, I thought Big Show, you know, not to go too much here, but Big Show, I thought he cut a pretty good promo with some real heavyweights in there when he got in there with Hogan and Flair and those guys. Big Show has spots where he can really be effective. I know there's a horse that's dead over there, and I'm going to kick it one more time, but Kane just has nothing left. Get him out of the equation, and you put some other guy. I would advocate as if I were Paul Heyman to have Wade Barrett be the other member of the authority, And then that is something that I'm going to be a lot more interesting to watch, even if you're making unfair matches. At least I get to see guys that can work. And it makes sense because, you know, they already pretty much handed Wade Barrett the belt. So put him in there. Now you got a champion. You got Mr. Money in the Bank, okay, and all the backing, the authority. That's at least something. But having all these guys, like seven guys, in which only one of them is actually worth watching in the ring, it's pretty tiresome.
So if Daniel Bryan doesn't win the Royal Rumble, I think the only thing that would work in terms of a storyline is to have him have a slow play with Rusev. You know, maybe that's something that where you really can showcase both guys, and you know, you have Daniel Bryan win the U.S. belt or whatever it is after a long program or whatever it is. But you know, either that or you put him as an intercontinental status and do something like that. I just think he's too big for that now. But I really see, you know, like I would be interested in watching a Rusev Daniel Bryan program because all the storytelling is there. Mm-hmm.
The neck injury,
yeah, the camel clutch that he has, and you know, Rusev, you know, Rusev hasn't lost to anybody, but of course, who is he with now? It's right back in Rusev, and that's the kind of program which I don't know, dude.
Yeah, let's not talk about that right now.
It's like, you know, they finally have all the pieces back, and it's like now we have to see where all the pieces, how they fit together.
Yeah, but unfortunately, going by history, the last few years. This is after Royal Rumble is when wrestling gets really bad for about 3 or 4 months, which is completely insane because this should be the time when, you know, you're building towards WrestleMania and this is kind of like, should be the best time of the year for wrestling. But this is usually when it gets pretty lame.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's lame right now if you have the mic in Triple H's hands and John Cena's hands. You know, and it's just kind of a, you know, you don't want to talk about being a dead horse, but I mean, it's just really bad. I mean, Triple H is just, I mean, it's funny. It's like you have this reunion show, right? And you have Triple H kind of play his role and in the beginning, and then he gets back with his friends and stuff, and then he's Triple H again. You know, he's like Triple H that, you know, we remember. And then he goes back into the role of being Triple H of the Authority. And one thing I do want to say is, what the fuck is Shawn Michaels on, dude? I mean, seriously. I mean, what the hell is the matter with this guy? I mean, he's just, like, jumping around the ring. And, you know, even when it was, yeah, the whole clique together. And it's like, Shawn, you do know that you are the leader of the clique. And you do know that you're coming across as a buffoon. You're like, you're not funny, dude. You know, and then he comes out with all the legends and stuff. And I'm kind of going, Hulk Hogan comes out first. I'm like, Hulk Hogan comes out first? Really? Like, WWE has this guy come out first, so you're going to have Flair come last, and then Flair comes out second, like, okay, then you have Shawn Michaels, and then this guy just bounces. I mean, am I the only one that's seen this? I mean, he's, like, bouncing around acting like an idiot and just saying, you know, and he's on the mic. He just sounds stupid on the mic. Well, what's going on? I mean, what's up with this guy? This guy used to be, like, a, you know, I mean, he used to be the heartbreak kid, and now he's just, like, a flipping idiot thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I miss Shawn Michaels' prime as well. In a lot of cases,
just like I miss Brock Lesnar going against the Authority and everybody getting behind him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was fed up at the time, and especially I was never a big fan of the Rockers, right? So when I started hearing what the main guy now is Shawn Michaels, forget that. So now I've had to kind of go back and see some of the different things. So I don't know. Like, yeah, he's. I don't know what his deal is.
I mean, even like you know, like they have like the countdown shows or whatever, and they'll show some of these matches. And when he came back, he had like this crazy haircut. It was like Elimination Chamber, and he just had like this. I don't even know what the haircut was. It was a chivalry type haircut. You know, like you have the knight, you have the squire, and then you have the page with that funny haircut. Mm-hmm. That's what he looked like to me. And then he comes out now, and he's like, oh, look, you know, he comes out with like this camouflage shirt,
yeah,
jeans, and cowboy boots. And like, did he go to a thrift store and pick them up and buy them real fast?
Yeah, he just got done hunting. He just came off of the.
I mean, I thought, yeah, how can he hunt when he has one eye looking the other way? I mean, how the hell is he supposed to Does he close the bad eye when he's shooting the arrow and stuff?
He got tips from Saturn on how to get it done.
But at least if Saturn came back, Saturn wouldn't be wearing a camouflage shirt that went down to his knees.
Yeah, you do remember Saturn was wearing dresses for quite a while in WCW.
I do, but that was WCW. Yeah. But I just don't get it. It's like, dude, I'm like, so you have Hogan come out. Hogan's in his red and yellow, which is fine. Flair comes out. Flair always comes out in a suit. It's like, well, why don't you come out like looking like someone that you'd actually want to see? It's like, it's kind of embarrassing, dude. Dressed like that,
All right. Who looks more broke down coming out these days, him or Bret Hart?
I'd rather see Bret Hart than Shawn Michaels. I mean, Bret Hart, at least Bret Hart.
I bet you in the corner on that one.
This is me saying this now. I mean, when Bret Hart comes out, it's like, I know that the guy's going to be good on the mic. I mean, Shawn Michaels comes out, he has a little skit with the Click, and he just, I think Triple H says something like, well, I wasn't hunting, and Shawn was like, oh, ho, ho, it's like, dude, like, what's the matter with you, dude? You lost it, daddy, Well, I feel like, speaking of Serpico, Al Pacino with Laleen in Incredible Ways. Like, what happened to you?
He's awesome.
One thing you never do, you never turn your I was gonna, it wasn't even turned on. I was going to give you a single.
I'm not going to join, man. I'm going to fucking diapers, man. I'm in a wheelchair.
They should not bring Shawn Michaels back anymore. If they do, like, he has to, like, either wear some DX clothes or something, but I just don't get it. And he still has, like, a ponytail that was, like, hot back in the 90s. I mean, he's wearing a ponytail and stuff. It's like, dude, I'm like, come on, dude. Come on, Sean. What's going on?
You're better than that, Sean.
You're better than that, dude. So, whatever, dude. We're in an hour. I thought we were going to talk about some more positive, uplifting things, but it really didn't turn out that way.
It's funny, though. Like, we both enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
Like, as a whole, it was a pretty entertaining show. But segment by segment, like, there's a lot of things that leave you kind of scratching your head. You say it that way.
Well, not so much.
We've been broken down by WWE now.
But it's not so much segment by segment. It's more of a case. I mean, like I laid it out. It's like, I don't watch the beginning. I don't watch the end. The guys that I do like, they're in feuds that don't matter. Did I like Roman Reigns and Big Show? Yeah. I like that part too. I thought that was entertaining. I really thought the Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan match was very good.
What did Ambrose do?
I don't know, but he did his Ambrose things, which is fine.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what he did. I remember.
You know, it was a funny thing with Ambrose was like the ambulance match, right? I didn't realize that was the ambulance match. I thought that was just going to be like a precursor to the pay per view. So when they said, like, oh, yeah, they have the ambulance match, I'm like, what? I'm like, I saw it, but I didn't realize that was, like, the actual ambulance match. I thought that was going to be your pay-per-view or something. And so it's just kind of like that, and then that feud's dead. And it's kind of funny we were talking about how, like, we were talking about Wrestle of the Year with Dean Ambrose. The reason why we didn't give it to him was because he would be involved with these feuds, and the payoff is really bad. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm just suddenly going, like, it took me, like, 2 weeks to realize. I was like, the ambulance match, that was your ambulance match? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess that works, sure, yeah, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah, it's like, that guy, like, his character is really good. His matches are very interesting. Oh, yeah, he beat Wade. He beat Wade Queen. Yeah, but it's just, his matches are good, he's very entertaining, he's good on the mic.
I even fast-forwarded the Mizdow match. And it was like a three tag again, or was it just one? It was one on one, wasn't it?
It was just one on one.
Yeah, I fast forwarded that part. Even though I knew Sandow was going to do his stuff on the side, it was just kind of like, fast forward. Because it really became about. The sad thing was that probably part of the reason why Raw was so good was because of all the guys that came back. I mean, it's good to see the Click come back. And then when, because I was fast forwarding it to get to it, and my fast forwarding thing sucks on the DVR. So I bumped it up a little bit farther. So it was when Xbox first came out. I was like, oh, that Xbox came on, so I rewound it. And it took me like 2 seconds, I'm like, oh, that's Damian Sandow instead of Xbox, so I'm sitting there going like, well, maybe Sandow's push is coming along somewhere. When do you think Sandow's gonna get away from The Miz? You think it happens this pay-per-view?
Sadly, it could, and again, that's going to be the death knell for the both of them, because there is no room on the card after Royal Rumble all the way to WrestleMania for two more singles guys. There is zero room. And this is the time that is logic would say the worst time to split up tag teams, and happens to be like the time where it most often happens for some reason. It could, only because the only reason why I think it could possibly happen, because it'd be absolutely stupid to do it.
So the success to a, so let's do this. The success to having a good Raw, you have to follow this program, right? You have to have Daniel Bryan wrestle. And not some stupid stipulation match. Just have him wrestle, do one-on-one. And if it gets,
and not Kane.
Yeah, and not Kane. If it gets broken up, it gets broken up. You have Dolph Ziggler wrestle. And then you can throw in a heel here or there with Wade Barrett. You can have Ambrose have something. And then you need to have the Usos in a tag match as well. And that's the key to success to any Raw. And that's pretty much it. Because the success of this Raw, which made it so good, was all the old guys coming back.
Right.
And that made it really interesting.
Well, and maybe what it was is, since they had all these old guys, you know, they could actually fill these segments better than what did they replace? Probably like a second diva promo, and I don't know, some other Adam Rose. Maybe Adam Rose gets a little bit more FaceTime. Did they do like a 6-man thing?
They did a 6-man, yeah.
They did a 6-man.
I don't know who won, because I fast forward.
Oh, the New Day one.
New Day.
And that's fine. Like, I am okay with that feud. Like, it's definitely down the card, but they're putting on decent matches.
There you go.
And
with two gimmicks that really don't work,
right?
But at least it's good wrestling.
At least the guys that are in there are doing. They're invested in what they're doing, and they're doing the best they can do in the ring, and they're not bogging it down with a bunch of additional extremely stupid stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So Raw.
That was positive.
Yeah. Raw was good. Yeah. Raw was good, and we've laid a blueprint down of the way Raw's can be better.
I'll give you one more addition to your blueprint that I'm surprised you left out, but Raw has been leaving out for the last couple of weeks. Where's Luke Harper at?
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
There's another guy that.
Maybe in the Royal Rumble, what I dream about is that Bray Wyatt does not win, but the Wyatt family comes back. Maybe if the Wyatt family comes back and they become a force again, maybe that's a good thing. You know, I'm praying that happens, because then there's another segment that can get filled in. You know, because every time I see Bray Wyatt on Raw, I'm like, ah, fuck. I'm like, man, I hope he doesn't talk. I hope he doesn't grab the microphone. You know, and just talk and not wrestle. So the past couple weeks he's been wrestling, and it's been fun. I'll sit and watch a Bray Wyatt match, and I think he fought on maybe SmackDown or the Raw before that or whatever. But you know, and then you know Ambrose does what he does, and it's fine. I mean, the week before when Ambrose, which we didn't talk about, when Ambrose had to get psychoanalyzed and stuff and everything. You know, I mean, in the beginning it was kind of wasn't really working. And over the course of the show, you kind of warmed up to it, and the payoff was good. Yeah. So there's things there. I mean, I don't want to come across. I mean, it's funny because I think what killed this show was you asked me about what I thought about Brock Lesnar, and one was my fault because I fast forwarded, but two is it get brought up as like I don't watch the. I was like, better have my donuts. I don't watch the beginning, and I don't watch the end, and I watch the middle, but I don't care about this feud. I don't care about that feud. I watch it for like the dumb gimmicks, and then we talk about the Ascension. Yeah.
So basically, it was your fault.
It was my fault. Well, it was your fault because you started talking about the Ascension, and I was like, you know, I was all amped up, you know, I was like ready to, I was like Shawn Michaels, you know, I was jumping up and down, ready to talk about having a nice podcast, it was a lot of fun, saying this is a great payoff show, and then you came out with the big show, you know, you came out like the big show, and you just killed it, you know, so good for you.
I came out like the big show. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just knock you right out.
So let's go ahead and do our golden stick and
okay, get even more negative.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least we'll have fun with it. So this is a big part of the show, to make sure that we don't lose all the recording that we just did. So, and if you've heard this, then it means that it worked. And if you didn't, then we have to do this for another hour, which I can't do because, like I said, I had to wake up at 5 a.m. So hold on a second.
Tully Blanchard. It's no new thing to any of the people in Philadelphia what's been going on between you and I. And it's damn good and ready for the time to... Sorry, Scott. I can't do that. Can we do this one more time?
Stand by. 5, 4, 3, 2...
Philip Blanchard, all the people of Philadelphia know all the things you've done to myself, all the things you've done to the American dream, Dusty Rhodes. But it's time for some dues to be paid, some real heavy dues. You've done some things to me that you're going to have to answer for, and Philadelphia's the place you're going to answer for. You know, the U.S. title is very prestigious, and you and I have gone round and round over. And when we come to Philadelphia this time, there's going to be no mistaking what's going to happen. I'm going to come on you like nobody's ever come on you before. I'm coming there to take you out in no uncertain terms. No baby doll at your side. Nobody to run distraction for you. Just you and I in the middle of that square circle, nose to nose, eye to eyeball, getting it on like you men should do. This is professional wrestling. This isn't some game. This is where men are men, and the boys stay on the side and watch what's going on. And Tully Blanchard, you can't run and hide from me anymore. You're going to have to deal with Magnum TA. All the stuff, all the things you've done are going to come to a head. Philadelphia is going to be the place. What the...
So, do you know who that was?
It's Magnum TA. There's several things wrong with that promo.
But, yeah.
I mean, it's entertaining because it's funny. It's in the vein of what's it, Jeff jumping Jeff Farmer over here.
But the whole thing is, this was on a NWA show before they, right when they started social show WCW. And they show him, like, doing an interview, and Shivani was on saying, like, you know, he's interviewed by millions of people that want to know who Magnum TA is. And he cuts his promo off. He's like, I can't do that. I can't. And I said, why do you show that part? Why don't you just show the second part, which, where it starts becoming a sexual fantasy that he has for Tully Blanchard. I'm going to come on you like no man's come on you before. Yeah. People used to come on Tully Blanchard. Oh, please, don't.
like men are supposed to do. And he gets later on in there. Couple botched. Was it like a, like something to, like something with the time that was what made him mess it up in the first place.
Yeah,
it was like, yeah, you can't edit out like the first mistake, and then the guy off camera with a 5-4-3-2 and then the silent one, like to just start talking.
The best part about it, the reason why I picked that promo was one, it was so bad. But two, it's like, it's the best one was because when he said, what the? So yeah. It was just like total, like, you know, like, he was a really good actor. Let's just say that. And he was kind of named after Magnum P.I. And Tom Selleck is a better actor than Magnum T.A. was. But then he got his ass kicked by the Four Horsemen after that.
Selleck did?
No, maybe he should have.
If he had T.C. and hanging around with him, then he would have had some legit backup.
T.C. is the helicopter driver,
yeah.
Right?
What was the other dude's name?
I don't know. Gopher?
Yeah. That's some other show.
That's Love Boat.
Yeah.
That's the joke, yeah.
Hey, it could have been. He looked like Gopher.
And then he had that guy with the English accent, his butler. Was that his butler?
Yeah, well, yeah. He was the butler for, like, the rich person that Magnum worked for. Magnum P.I. had the better stash, though. T.A. had the better mullet.
Yeah, he had the better mullet, and then he'd drive around on Harley Davidson. I don't drive fast cars. I don't drive limousines. I drive a Harley Davidson. And the players the whole time going like, yeah, I could tell. Yeah, I could tell. let me bring one thing up real fast. Dude, I'm getting sick and tired of football players or football teams trying to copy Ric Flair. I mean, that one that the Colts did was so flippin' weak, dude. I mean, you had that guy, like, saying limousine riding. And it's like, well, if you're going to copy Flair, don't go, limousine riding, and then pretend you're driving a limousine. Because the whole thing is, like, when you're in a limousine, you don't drive, dude. You know, you sit in the back, you know. Yeah. And then the cheerleaders came out with something that, you know, after that. And it's just like, what are you guys doing, man? You know, I mean, you have actually, like, you're in the most popular sport in the U.S., and you're showing just how bad you are and how great this guy was, you know? So I just get tired of the whole kind of, let's do a Ric Flair routine. And you know, nobody's ever seen that before, and they think it's the best thing ever. So it's
every year somebody does it in the playoffs, and then ESPN has to cover it like it's the first time.
Yeah.
It's like the third year in a row someone's done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... My Niners were the first ones to do it, so.
But your Niners had Ric Flair actually show up,
right?
Yeah,
right, and he did it for them.
Yeah.
No, that was pretty weak. And then the other thing was like, the dude had such a hard Southern accent that I couldn't even understand what he was saying half the time, right? But then there was actually a piece on, they did a piece on ESPN with Ric Flair, and then he was they were kind of splicing in, and I got, I heard what he said, and it was the line that I couldn't understand. He was saying something like like he had the alligator shoots are the only thing keeping him from flying or keeping him down or something like that. And then Ric Flair did it, and I was like, oh yeah, that sounds good when Rin Rick does it.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to leave it to that guy. I mean, I don't know how to segue that back to Magnum TA, except to say that's a terrible promo. You got a guy? Because last couple of weeks, you kind of sounded like you had a guy, and then I kind of imposed my guy over yours, so...
I have a guy, but we might have put him in already, but I don't know if we have. But speaking of guys that didn't have personalities, and they really, then they started getting on the mic, and they really started carrying themselves, and you really started appreciating what they did in the ring, because this guy had it in the ring before, like some really like, maybe we've done it before, maybe we've done them, but the guy I want to put in is Canyon.
We never did Canyon.
So Canyon, I was thinking about it the other day, or actually I was thinking about it today, but Canyon, when he first came out, he was Mortis, and he just had like monster moves, and you started realizing how good his moves were when the WCW video game came out. And it was the same company that did...
it was THQ.
THQ, yeah. And so, you know, Canyon had just had a great moveset. And you're like, wow, this guy... And then you start watching him, he was doing the same moves. I remember that they were saying like he was like an innovator of offense, right?
Right. That was, yeah.
Yeah, and that was one of Shivani's great nicknames for the guy. But then he really started coming into his own when he started doing... you know, who's better than Canyon?
Who better than Canyon?
Well, that was when he was in Louisiana or New Orleans or whatever. It's like, so for all the Cajuns out there, who better than Canyon?
Well, I thought that was really good. And then, like, you also got to remember that was the time when Dallas Page had some momentum going. And they had, like, a really short-lived faction, the Jersey Triad, when it was Canyon, Page, and Bam Bam Bigelow. And I thought that really worked well, too. And, like, that was perfect. You had Page as kind of like... the front man, the guy that cut majority of the promos. You had the powerhouse of Bam Bam Bigelow, and then you had a worker like Canyon that could just, like you said, come in and do all these moves that nobody had seen before and keep the match really entertaining. So, he was fun to watch. I remember seeing him as Mortis and thinking, dude, this guy's terrible, right? And I might have been because it reminded me too much of Glacier, right?
Mm-hmm. Because I think he had a feud with Glacier.
Maybe
either they had a feud, or then he started teaming with Glacier.
Yeah, maybe he was teaming with them or something like that. Because
I think he started off with the Faces of Fear, not Faces of Fear, but what's it called?
Dungeon.
The Dungeon. Yeah, I think he was in the Dungeon in the beginning, and he was kind of lost in the shuffle. Mm-hmm. But you talk about the Triad. Paige did some mic work on there, but Canyon did a lot of the mic work on there as well.
I think Canyon held his own, and especially because he had the "Who's Better Than Canyon." He had a couple good catchphrases to go in there. I think Page carried the majority of the promo, but Canyon was really effective because he had a couple of hot catchphrases. And again, like at that time, and especially what WCW was, the better wrestling show, it's like you get to see that guy showcase what he did best, right? So yeah, he wasn't. I mean, he was a decent promo. He wasn't great. But you didn't have to sit there and watch him talk for 15 minutes because they let him get in the ring.
Well, the funny thing was is that I thought, because part of the reason why we did the Hall of Kayfabe was to kind of, for a couple things. It started when Booker T went into the Hall of Fame, and to me he was like one of the first kind of legit guys where we're looking going like, well, he's not like a legend. He's not like the legends that are being put in, but he was a great worker, and he was deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. So we started kind of bringing in guys that really didn't get their due, but were guys in the kind of same Booker T ilk that, that was a really good worker and they're recognized for what they did. I think Canyon, was a guy, I mean, the guy was maybe 6'5 or 6'6 or 6'7, maybe even a small 6'7, mm-hmm. Better on the mic than Diamond Dallas Page was. And in terms of work rate, I mean, people like to say that, Page, was a shitty worker and stuff and everything like that, and he was just pandered to the crowd and everything. But I mean, Page was hot for a New York minute, or maybe a New Jersey minute. I mean, he was hot. I mean, I'd watch his matches and I liked watching his finisher. I thought Canyon was in the same mold. I mean, I thought Canyon, you put him and Page, you put him and Page side by side, I thought Canyon was the way better worker, and I thought he was better on the mic than Page was as well.
maybe content wise, Page had that. He had a pretty good presence about him. So yeah, I mean, he could be right. Maybe if I went back, I'd appreciate Canyon's promos a little bit more. But I'm more the who better than Canyon. That thing was working really well.
That opened your eyes, right?
Yeah.
Well, and he's also with Raven, and
right.
He really brought out Raven's character too. Like, he kind of like poked holes in like Raven's kind of persona, and just pretty much saying like, you know, you're a big crybaby and stuff,
and you're like a rich kid.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and then you know, Raven's like, oh, leave me alone, Canyon, you know, stuff like that, and they'd be in the front of Raven's parents' house, and it's like this big old palatial mansion and stuff and everything like that, and. Canyon's just ripping a new one about how he's all fake and stuff and everything. So, but and of course, since that worked for that WCW segment, naturally it never went anywhere. And you know, and we just go from there. But you know, just you know, he got lost in the shuffle. You know, I mean, it was a case where he was held down like everybody else was in WCW, and then when WWE bought them, you know, he really didn't have a place. But I thought he was working it, and what really opened my eyes was that triad, because I thought the triad was working, and it ended after, like, you know, it was kind of funny, you know, you're looking at this triad thing, like, man, this can go on for, like, you know, maybe 5-6 months, or this can be, like, a good faction for a year. And it was working really well. They were getting some victories, and then they squashed them after 2 months. So I never really understood that. And then you kind of have the whole kind of homosexual references that he was a homosexual in wrestling and stuff, and that's why I think he wrote a book maybe or something.
I think, yeah.
And he came out and said that, you know, I don't, you know, nobody allows me to work because I'm a homosexual and stuff and everything, and then of course he dies. So you know, definitely a guy that could have been something but never really panned out.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably, you know, that wasn't like, it's a much more progressive time for you to be like a homosexual wrestler in today's day and age, but at that time that probably wasn't gonna fly.
Yeah. I mean, if you come out today saying that you're a homosexual, you get like a 3 week push and then you're buried. But
then you get buried.
But back then, if you came out and said you're homosexual, you got buried right away. So right, it works out good. You dress up in a bunny suit, maybe, right. You know.
Well.
And the bunny's gone too. There's no bunny either.
Canyon has much better ability than D. Young ever did. So for him to get his your quick reference there towards D. Young, I don't know that he ever deserved much more than 3 weeks of a push, regardless of his orientation.
Well, I think he should have gotten a way bigger push as part of
the tag team.
Yes. The Primetime Players was working really well.
Agreed.
And even, you know, the work that they were starting to do towards the end, when they were kind of being a comedy act, you know, like they'd try to do stuff like underhanded stuff and it wouldn't work. And then Darren Young was like, it's not working. He's like, what do I do now? So, we're just going to number 94. We will check you out after the Royal Rumble. Both my girls are, really amped up they want to watch. That's their favorite pay-per-view is the Royal Rumble.
Yeah. I think it's mine too. Survivor Series used to be, if they had more of the traditional matches, I think it would be again.
Teams of Five, try to stay alive.
Yeah, if they had more than just the one, I think I'd be more into it. But I think, just for the uniqueness of what it is, Royal Rumble is a match that's completely different than every other match that they have in the year. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I think this is going to be a really interesting one, because I think that we kind of had a very good idea who's going to win a lot of the previous years. But I think it is pretty wide open. I think there is probably five guys that you could say all have a relatively high percentage of opportunity to win the thing.
And the better thing too is that if it's a guy that we don't think it's going to be, and say it's like a heel that's going to win, the way the storyline is now, it's like it kind of provides new hope that it's going to breathe new life into any storyline. So even if it's a guy like... See, like the year before, like, you know, when CM Punk, we wanted CM Punk to win and he didn't win, and you were just kind of like, oh man, this sucks. And then I forget who won that. Who won that?
About 2 years ago?
Was it 2 years ago?
No, I'm asking. Last year, I know who won. It was Batista last year.
Yeah, so yeah, it was last year, because that's when CM Punk was like the second or third guy in, mm-hmm. ran the whole match, and then, you know,
right.
and then of course, that signaled the end of CM Punk in the WWE. And I remember, because both my daughters were really mad. They're like, man, they're like, how come CM Punk didn't win? I was like, welcome to Watching Wrestling. Yeah. So we'll check you guys out next week. I have my man over here, but I have my donuts. I'm Bad News Ramen, and we'll be positive like we were this week too. Okay.
You know what we're gonna be positive about though.
You can be positive about it. I've had experience in it. I'm not positive about it.
I'll remain positive. Okay. About fake breasts.
Very good.
Yo, it's like this and only this. So I'm one. Tell me, my mom's in front of the mall, and then I see this nigga about milk. From fifth grade, I knew this kid was swift. Pain was how his mind long, so we got his grind on. But now, with years later, I say, hey, he flashes one full of AU. And hey, you, the warning drove him a Seville as it sped by. Let fly, rat a tat tat. His blood spattered. I strike, see the driver with my eye. Mom's grabs guy and caught lead in her thigh. I put her behind the trash can, dash to my man. It was too late. It's sad that Rommel was perforated. Waited in sweat for the medics as my mom's lead. Even if he was alive at the scene by now, my man Rom's dead. The cops do nothing, cause my skin has too much shade. They'll dismiss this as some niggas misbehave. But I'll never forget the driver of that blue Seville. And live for the day to bust shots in his grip. But still, I can't do this halo. My crew's fine, so I slip two dimes into the paper.
I'll stay home, get some rest. Call my girl in. Tazay's on the phone talking about the world's end. What happened? Your mom's got capped and your niggas dead. You're talking about white backs and bullets in the head. Well, I'm just coming dozens, but I got cousins that live around the block. And they got a clock and we just simply trust them. I trust them. What my life and plus the clock is like and easily concealed. Yeah. Easy, it'll appear like cap right. Right. Hey, Taz, you don't sound rap tight. Maintain composure, hit the dozer, pick a book up. Don't be shook up, I got hook up. Look up, I'm at